This Friday, Leonard Slatkin, one of the world's most acclaimed conductors, makes a welcome return to Dublin when he conducts the RTE National Symphony Orchestra for the first of two concerts in the orchestra's season. Friday's concert will feature Kina, his own composition in remembrance of his parents, alongside music by Samuel Barber and the Symphony No. 4 of Johannes Brahms. I'm delighted to be speaking to Leonard Slatkin about Friday night's concert right now. A return to Dublin. Leonard, you enjoyed the visit back in May. You were here, obviously, as did many people.
I'm so thrilled to hear that. I did have a good time. I had been to Dublin before, but only as a conductor of visiting orchestras. So this was my first visit to the local band, and we had such a good time. I'm thrilled that I'll be coming back again this season. I love it here.
One of the things that was picked up on in the Irish Times in particular and other reviewers as well was in terms of your conducting on that night was economy, they spoke about. One of the particular critics spoke about economy of gesture with maximum results. Now, you know, many people think of, I suppose, the classic image of the conductor is the flailing arms and the hair and, you know, moving about on the podium.
Well, as far as the latter part goes, the hair went away a long time ago. So that's not going to move too much anywhere. Also, I just turned 75, so I'm a little more limited in my capabilities of being able to be flamboyant. But on the other hand, I now find, after more than 50 years in the profession, that the more economical I am with my gestures, the more it forces the musicians into really listening to each other and not focusing so much on me. So it becomes a gigantic piece of chamber music, which I think suits the majority of the repertoire that I choose to do.
Yeah, and I mentioned in the introduction that one of the pieces that you're doing is this piece, Kina, mm-hmm. which is a Hebrew word, Kuinu. The Irish word means lament.
And that's what it means in Hebrew as well. Also can be elegy. Mm. It was a piece I wrote about 4 years ago when my father would have turned 100 years old, and he was an astonishing musician. He and my mother were mainstays of Los Angeles music tradition from the mid-30s through the 1960s. My dad was the concertmaster, or leader of the orchestra for 20th Century Fox Studios. My mother was the first cellist at Warner Brothers, and her brother, my uncle, was the pianist at Warner's. So most people have heard them somewhere, either in films, as one half of the Hollywood String Quartet, or as soloists and leaders of the orchestras for such artists as Nat King Cole, George Shearing, and in particular Frank Sinatra.
He was a family friend. A
very close friend of the family. Often my father would not only play on all of his albums, but conduct as well. He was at our house all the time. My brother and I called him Uncle Frank when we were very little. And Frank came over to the house to discuss the next project with my dad. We'd all sit down to dinner, and then after dinner, Uncle Frank would take us by the hand, lead us upstairs, put us to bed, and sing us to sleep.
Frank Sinatra sang lullabies to you to put you to sleep at night.
Mm-hmm.
Were your eyes not wide open listening to the brilliance
really
of it?
I was really little, and I had no idea. And if I'd known better, you're right, I would have stayed awake for the whole thing. But apparently, he succeeded. Now, we got to know him very well. He was always kind to the family. Of course, there was the other side to him, but I really never had the chance to see it. He would not do any recordings without my parents being either the first violinist or conductor or a cellist. He just relied on them so much. He had fantastic interest in classical music, came to listen to the quartet rehearse all the time. We visited him in Las Vegas, in Palm Springs, at his house. It was a very close and wonderful relationship.
It also links in, I mean, it gives a sense of the breadth of music that you must have been listening to as a child growing up at one level. But important within all of this, and particularly in the case of the piece, Kina, and the fact that you're playing Brahms. Brahms is linked into your own composition.
Correct. When I wrote the piece, I immediately thought to something that happened in 1963. My parents had never played the famous double concerto of Brahms publicly. work for violin and cello and orchestra. So they were finally set to do this. They rehearsed on a Wednesday night. I was there. I was 19, and it was extraordinary. The concert was on Saturday night, but as fate had it, my dad died the night before.
And was that a very sudden death?
Very sudden. It was a heart attack. But my father was an alcoholic. He smoked about three and a half packages a day. He worked himself constantly. And we had no evidence that there was heart disease, but clearly something was there that hadn't been checked. Now, this is 1963, so things are different now.
Different place, right?
But it was very sudden, and he was only 47 years old. So the performance never happened. And so I decided to use the four notes that begin the slow movement as the basis for my piece. And at the end, we finally hear the violin and cello here played off stage, representing my parents, and they start playing longer phrases from the Brahms, but they never finish any phrase, to remind me anyway, that my parents never had a chance to finish what they started.
I love that detail of those instruments being off stage. It's such a beautiful way of remembering it, and the unfinished nature of the phrases.
I was very happy today when we rehearsed it, and the orchestra was very kind in their pleasure with the piece. And I told them the story, as I will with the audience as well. It's very important to know that.
Yeah, because it gives a real way into the piece itself. Yeah. I presume it also gives us a way into the symphony, the Brahms Symphony No. 4, which you're playing with, with the RT National Symphony Orchestra on Friday evening.
Yeah, I would say that my piece is a kind of sentimental work, meant to be not a sad piece, really, but just a remembrance. And the Brahms is sort of the summation of his own musical thought and life as he reaches the end of his career, possibly the crowning achievement of his symphonic work, certainly, a work that, surprisingly for the time, ends in a minor key. That doesn't happen very often within either the classic or the romantic repertoire. So his piece is tinged with thoughts of fate and drama, very much connected to the same thing my piece tries to do, but in a different way.
And in between, you have the Samuel Barber, the piano concerto, not a piece that's performed very often at all.
Well, I have a long history with this piece, and particularly with the man for whom it was written. His name was John Browning, one of the great American pianists of his generation, which included people like Van Cliburn and Byron Janis and so many others. So John owned the piece. And when it was written back in 1962 for the first week of Lincoln Center concerts, it achieved an astonishing success. But it became inextricably linked to John playing it. So for all the time John was alive, nobody dared. We couldn't do it. But John and I played it all over the world. And I was very pleased. I was looking up something about our soloist. I began to wonder, well, how many pianists actually play it now? And this piece is starting to come very much into the repertoire. And I think that's important because, in my opinion, this is probably the finest work in the genre by an American composer. It's truly an extraordinary piece of music, virtuoso to a fault, but lyric and beautiful at the same time. That's the Barber's style and sound.
And Xian Wang is the pianist on Friday evening. Will you finish, Leonard, by setting up the second? I want to listen to a little bit of the second movement from the Brahms Symphony, because such beautiful lyricism, such beautiful melody, such beautiful harmonies in here.
People often ask, what's your favorite piece of music? And of course, the answer for us performers is whatever we're playing at that time. But the Brahms Fourth Symphony holds a very special place for most people who conduct, and even for musicians playing in the orchestra. In particular, we can be taken by the breadth and beautiful nature of the second movement, beginning with these horn calls, then imitated by the other woodwinds, leading into a very distant clarinet melody, just accompanied by the strings gently plucking. And as this movement goes on, we get more drama, more energy. And when it's over, this one movement in itself is like a satisfying meal.
And this is you conducting the Detroit Symphony Orchestra. Second movement from Brahms Symphony No. 4. Opening section there of the second movement from Brahms Symphony No. 4, Leonard Slatkin conducting the Detroit Symphony Orchestra. It's the RTE National Symphony Orchestra that he will be conducting this Friday night, in a performance of that work alongside his own composition, Kina, and Xiang Wang playing the Samuel Barber Piano Concerto. You can find out full details of that concert on nch.ie.